across the practice grounds and falling. He also stabbed himself in the leg with his very own sword as he fell, but that was a very minor injury.
"Went a little too easy on her," John said, passing by and helping Simon up. "The dregs won't learn if they're not taught, you know."
His voice was kind. His glance at Marcel was not. "Leave her alone," Simon muttered, but he did not say that Marcel had beaten him fairly. They all thought he was a hero. John grinned at him and walked on. Marcel didn't even look at him. Simon studied his leg, which stung.
It was not all stabbing. Some of it was regular stuff, like running, but as Simon tried to run and keep up with people a lot more athletic than he had ever been, he was constantly plagued by memories of how his lungs had never burned for lack of air, how his heart had never pounded from overexertion. He had been fast, once, faster than any of these Shadow Hunter trainees, cold and predatory and powerful.
And dead, he reminded himself as he fell behind the others yet again. He didn't want to be dead. Running was still a lot better than horseback riding. The Academy introduced them to horseback riding on their first Friday there. Simon thought it was supposed to be a treat. Everyone else acted as if it was a treat. Only those of the elite stream were allowed to go riding, and at mealtimes they had been mocking the dregs for missing out. It seemed to cheer Julie and John up in the face of endless terrible soup. Simon, precariously balanced on top of a huge beast that was both rolling its eyes and apparently trying to tap dance, did not feel this was any sort of treat. The dregs had been sent off to learn elementary facts about shadow hunting. They had most of their classes apart from the elite, and John assured Simon they were boring. Simon really felt he could do with being bored right about now.
"Sai," said George in an undertone. "Quick tip. Riding works better if you keep your eyes open."
"My previous riding experience is the carousel at Central Park," Simon snapped. "Forgive me for not being Mr. Darcy." George was, as several of the ladies were remarking, an excellent horseman. He barely had to move for the horse to respond to him, both of them moving smoothly together, sunlight rippling off his stupid curls. He looked right, made it all look easy and graceful like a knight in the movies. Simon remembered reading books about magic horses that read their riders' every thought, books about horses born of the north wind. It was all part of being a magical warrior, having a noble steed. Simon's horse was defective, or possibly a genius that had worked out that Simon could not possibly control it. It went off for a wander in the woods, with Simon on its back, alternately pleading, threatening, and offering bribes. If Simon's horse could read his every thought, then Simon's horse was a sadist. As night drew in and the evening grew cold, the horse wandered back to its stall. Simon had no choice in the matter, but he did manage to tumble off the horse and stagger into the academy, his fingers and knees gone entirely numb.
"Ah, there you are," said Scarsberry. "George Lovelace was beside himself. He wanted to assemble a search party for you."
Simon regretted his spiteful thoughts about George's horsemanship. "Let me guess," said Simon. "Everyone else just said, nah, being left for dead builds character."
"I was not concerned you were going to be eaten by bears in the deep, dark woods," said Scarsberry, who did not look as if he'd ever been concerned about anything in his life, ever.
"Of course you weren't. That would be
"You had your dagger," said Scarsberry, casually, and walked away, leaving Simon to call after him.
My bear-killing dagger? Do you really think me killing bears with a dagger is a plausible scenario? What information do you have about bears in these woods? I think it's your responsibility as an educator to tell me if there are bears in the woods."
"See you at javelin practice bright and early, Lewis," said Scarsberry, and marched on without looking back.
"Are there bears in the woods?" Simon repeated to himself. "It's a simple question." Why are Shadowhunters so bad at simple questions? The days passed in a blur of horrible, violent activity. If it wasn't javelin practice, Simon was getting thrown around a room. George was very apologetic later, but that did not help. If it wasn't dagger work, it was more swordplay and humiliating defeat before the blades of tiny, evil, trainee Shadowhunters. If it wasn't swordplay, it was the obstacle course, and Simon refused to speak of the obstacle course. Julie and John were growing noticeably cool at mealtimes, and a few comments about Mondays were passed. At last, Simon staggered wearily to the next exercise in futility and sharp objects, and Scarsberry placed a bow in his hands.
"I want everyone to try and hit the targets," said Scarsberry. "And Lewis, I want you to try not to hit any of the other trainees."
Simon felt the weight of the bow in his hands. It had a nice balance, he thought, easy to lift and manipulate. He nocked the arrow and felt the tautness of the string, ready to release, primed to let it fly along the path Simon wanted. He drew his arm back, and it was that easy. Bullseye. He fired once more, and then again, arrows flying to find their targets, and his arms burned and his heart pounded with something like joy. He was glad to be able to feel his muscles working and his heart thumping. He was so glad to be alive again and able to feel every moment of this. Simon lowered his bow to find everyone staring at him.
"Can you do that again?" asked Scarsbury.
He'd learned to shoot arrows in summer camp, but standing here holding a bow, he remembered something else. He remembered breathing, his heart beating, shadow hunters watching him. He'd still been a human then, a mundane they all despised, but he killed a demon. He remembered. He'd seen something had to be done, and he'd done it. A guy, not so different from who he was now. Simon felt a smile spread across his face, hurting his cheeks. "Yeah, I think I can."
Julie and John were both much more friendly over dinner than they had been for the last few days. Simon told them about killing the demon, what he remembered, and John offered to teach him some swordplay tricks.
"I would really love to hear more about your adventures," said Julie.
"Whatever you can remember, especially if they involve Jace Herondale. Do you know how he got that sexy scar on his throat?"
"Ah," said Simon, "actually, yes. Actually, that was me." Everybody stared at him. "I might have bitten him, a tiny bite. It was more like a nibble, really."
"Was he delicious?" asked Julie, after a thoughtful pause.
"He looks like he would be delicious."
Said Simon, "he's not a juice box."
Beatrice nodded earnestly. Both the girls seemed very interested in this discussion. Too interested. Their eyes were glazed.
"Did you maybe climb on top of him slowly and then lower your head to his tender, pulsing throat?" Beatrice said. "Could you feel the heat radiating off his body into yours?"
"Did you lick his throat before you bit him?" Julie asked.
"Oh, and did you get a chance to feel his biceps?" she shrugged.
"I'm just curious about, you know, vampire techniques."
"I imagine Simon was both gentle and commanding during his special moment with Jace," said Beatrice dreamily. "I mean, it was special, wasn't it?"
"No," said Simon. "I can't stress that enough. I've bitten several shadow hunters. I bit Isabel Lightwood, and I bit Alec Lightwood. Biting Jace was not a tender and unique moment."
"You bit Isabel and Alec Lightwood?" asked Julie, who was starting to sound freaked out. "What did the Lightwoods ever do to you?"
"Wow," said George. "I imagine the demon realms were fearsome and terrifying, but it seems it was pretty much non-stop nom nom nom."
"That was not how it was," Simon said.
"Can we stop talking about this?" John demanded, his voice sharp.
"I'm sure you all did what you had to do, but the idea of shadow hunters being prey for a downworlder is disgusting."
Simon did not love the way John said downworlder, as if the words downworlder and disgusting were more or less the same thing. But maybe it was natural for John to be disturbed. Simon could remember being disturbed about it himself. Simon hadn't wanted to make his friends into his prey, either. Today had gone pretty well. Simon didn't want to ruin it. He decided he was in a good enough mood to let it go. Simon felt better about the academy until that night, when he woke up from a doze to a deluge of memory. The memories hit like that sometimes, not in sharp, tiny jabs, but in an insistent and terrible cascade. He'd thought of his former roommate before. He'd known he had a friend, a roommate named Jordan, and that Jordan had been killed. But he hadn't recalled the feelings of it. The way Jordan had taken him in when his mother had barred her door, talking about Maya with Jordan. Hearing Clary laugh that Jordan was cute, talking to Jordan, patient and kind, and always seeing Simon as more than a job, more than a vampire. He remembered seeing Jordan and Jace snarl at each other and then play video games like idiots, and Jordan finding him sleeping in a garage, and Jordan looking at Maya with such regret. And he remembered holding Jordan's Praetor Lupus pendant in his hands, in Idris, after Jordan was dead. Simon had held that pendant again since then, once he had regained some of his memories, feeling the weight of it and wondering what the Latin motto meant. He had known Jordan was his roommate, and known he was one of the many casualties of the war. He had never truly felt the weight of it. Until now.
The sheer weight of memory made him feel as if stones were being piled on his chest, crushing him. Simon couldn't breathe. He erupted from his sheets, swinging his legs over the side of the bed, his feet hitting the stone floor with a shock of cold.
What is it? Mumbled George. The possum come back.
Jordan's dead, Simon said bleakly, and put his face in his hands. There was a silence. George did not ask him who Jordan had been, or why he suddenly cared. Simon would not have known how to explain the tangle of grief and guilt in his chest. How he hated himself for forgetting Jordan, even though he could not have helped it. How this was like finding out Jordan was dead for the first time, and like having a scarred-over wound reopened, both at once. There was a bitter taste in Simon's mouth, like old, old blood. George reached out and put a hand on Simon's shoulder. He kept it there, grip firm, hand warm and steady, something to anchor Simon in the cold, dark night of memory.
Sorry, he whispered.
Simon was sorry, too. At dinner the next day, it was soup again. It had been soup for every meal for many days now. Simon didn't remember a life before soup, and he despaired of ever achieving a life after soup. Simon wondered if the Shadow Hunters had runes to protect against scurvy. Their usual group was clustered around their usual table, chatting, when John said, "I wish I was being taught about demons by someone with less of an agenda, if you know what I mean." Said Simon, who mostly sat through their classes on demons through the ages in deep relief that he was not being asked to move. "Don't we all have the same demon-hunting agenda?"
"You know what I mean," said John. "We've got to be taught about the past crimes of warlocks as well. We have to fight the Downworlders, too. It's naive to pretend they're all tame."
"The Downworlders," Simon repeated. The soup turned to ashes in his mouth, which was actually an improvement. "Like vampires?"
"No," said Julie hastily. "Vampires are great. They have, you know, class.
Compared to the other Downworlders. But if you're talking about creatures like werewolves, Simon, you must see they're not exactly our kind of people. If you can call them people at all." She said werewolves, and Simon could not help but think of Jordan, flinching as if he'd been struck and unable to keep his mouth shut a moment longer. Simon pushed his bowl of soup away and shoved his chair back. "Don't tell me about what I must, Julie," he said coldly. "I must inform you, there are werewolves worth 100 of your and John Shadowhunter asses. I must say, I am sick to the teeth of you insulting mundanes and telling me I'm your special pet exception, as if I want to be the pet of people who bully kids younger and weaker than they are. And I must tell you, you better hope this academy works out and mundanes like me ascend, because from all I can see of you, the next generation of Shadowhunters is going to be nothing without us." He looked to George, the way he looked to George to share jokes in class and over meals, to see if George agreed with him at all. George was staring at his plate.
"Come on, man," he muttered. Don't do this. They'll make you move rooms. Just sit down. Everybody can apologize, and we can go on as we were."
Simon took a deep breath, absorbed the disappointment, and said, "I don't want things to go on as they were. I want things to change." He turned away from the table, from all of them, marched over to where the Dean and Scarsbury were sitting, and announced at the top of his voice, "Dean Penhallow, I want to be placed in the stream for mundanes."
"What?"
Scarsbury exclaimed. "The dregs?" The Dean dropped her spoon in the soup with a noisy splash.
"The mundane course, Mr. Scarsbury, if you please. Do not refer to our students in that manner."
"I'm glad you came to me with this, Simon," she said after a moment of hesitation. "I understand you may be having difficulties with the course, given your mundane nature, but..."
"It's not that I'm having difficulty," said Simon. "It's that I'd rather not associate with the elite Shadowhunter families. I just don't think they're my kind of people."
His voice rang out against the stone ceiling. There were a lot of young kids staring at him. One was little Marisol, regarding him with a startled, thoughtful expression. Nobody said anything. They just looked.
"Okay. I've said all I had to say. I'm feeling bashful, and I'm gonna go now," Simon said, and fled the room.
He almost walked right into Katerina Loss, who had been watching from the doorway. "Sorry," he mumbled.
"Don't be," Katerina said. "In fact, I'm gonna come with you. I'll help you pack."
"What?" Simon asked, hurrying after her. "I actually have to move?"
"Yeah. They put the dregs in the underground level," Katerina said.
They put some kids in the dungeons, and nobody has ever pointed out that this is a disgusting system before now?
Is it? Katerina asked.
Do tell me more about the Shadow Hunters and their occasional tendency to be unfair. I'll find it very fascinating and surprising. Their excuse is that the lower levels are easier to defend for the kids who cannot fight as well as their fellow students.
She strode into Simon's room and looked around for his things. I actually haven't unpacked very much, Simon said. I was afraid of the possum in the wardrobe.
The what?
George and I found it very mysterious, too, Simon told her earnestly, picking up his bag and stuffing in the few things he had left lying out. He wouldn't want to forget his lady gear.
Well, Katerina said, whatever about possums, the point I want to make is...
I may have gotten you wrong, Simon.
Simon blinked.
Oh?
Katerina smiled at him. It was astonishing, like a blue sunrise.
I was not looking forward to coming to teach here. Shadow hunters and downworlders do not get along, and I try to keep myself more separated from the Nephilim even than most others of my kind. But I had a dear friend called Ragnar Fell, who used to live in Idris and taught in the academy for decades before it was closed. He never had the greatest opinion of Shadow Hunters, but he was fond of this place. I lost him recently, and I knew this place could not operate without teachers. I wanted to do something in memory of him, even though I hated the idea of teaching a pack of arrogant Nephilim brats. But I love my friend more than I hate Shadow Hunters.
Simon nodded. He thought of his remembrance of Jordan, thought of how it hurt to even look at Isabel and Clary. Without memory, they were lost. And nobody wanted someone they loved to be lost.
So I may have been a little cranky about coming, Katerina admitted. I may have been a little cranky about you, because, from all I know, you didn't think much of being a vampire. And now you're cured. What a miracle. And the Shadow Hunters are so quick to pull you into the fold. You truly get to be one of them. What you always wanted. You had the stain of being one of us wiped away.
I didn't... Simon said and swallowed. I can't remember it all, so it's like defending the actions of someone else sometimes.
Must be frustrating.
Simon laughed. You have no idea. I didn't want to be a vampire, I don't think. I wouldn't want to be made one again. Being stuck at age 16 while all my friends and family would have grown up without me, having the urge to hurt people. I didn't want any of that, but look. I don't remember much, but I remember enough. I remember I was a person back then, just as much as I am now. Becoming a Shadow Hunter won't change that. If I ever do become a Shadow Hunter, I've forgotten enough. I will not forget that. He lifted his bag onto his shoulder and gestured for Katerina to lead the way to his new room. She did. Descending down stone steps, Simon had figured were to the basement. He had not figured they kept kids in the basement. It was dark on the stairs. Simon put a hand on the wall to steady himself, and then snatched it back. Ah, disgusting.
Yes, most of the subterranean surfaces are covered in black slime, said Katerina in a matter-of-fact tone. Watch yourself.
Thank you. Thanks for that warning.
You're welcome, said Katerina, a hint of laugh in her voice.
For the first time, it occurred to Simon that Katerina might actually be nice.
You said, if you ever do become a Shadow Hunter, are you thinking about leaving?
Now that I've touched the slime I am, Simon muttered. No, I don't know what I want. Except that I don't want to give up yet. He almost reconsidered when Katerina led him to his room. It was much darker than the last room, though laid out in the same way. The wooden bedposts of the two narrow beds looked decayed, and in the corners of the room, the black slime had grown almost viscous, turning into tiny black slime waterfalls.
I don't remember hell all that well, Simon said, but I think I recall it was nicer than this.
Katerina laughed, then shocked Simon by leaning in and giving him a peck on the cheek.
Good luck, Daylighter, she told him, laughing at his expression. And whatever you do, don't use the bathrooms on this floor. Not on any floor, obviously, but especially on this one.
Simon did not ask her to explain, because he was terrified. He sat down on his new bed and then stood hastily back up at the resulting long creak and cloud of dust. Hey, at least this time he didn't have a roommate. He was king of this claustrophobic, slimy domain. He set his mind to unpacking. The wardrobe in this room was actually clean and empty, which was a definite improvement. Simon might go live in the wardrobe with his funny t-shirts. He was long finished unpacking by the time George sauntered in, dragging his suitcase behind him and bearing his broken racket on his shoulder like a sword.
"Hey, man."
"Hey," Simon said cautiously.
What
are you doing here?" George dumped his suitcase and his racket on the slimy floor and threw himself down on the bed. He stretched luxuriously, ignoring the ominous creak of the bed beneath him.
"The thing is, the advanced course is actually pretty hard," George said, as Simon started to smile. "And you may have heard, Lovelaces are quitters."
Simon was even more relieved to have George the next day, so they could sit together rather than at one of the tables of 13-year-old mundanes who were all giving them the side-eye when they were not whispering brokenly about their phones. The day brightened further when Beatrice plopped down at their new table as well. "I'm not going to drop out of advanced training to follow you around like Curly Top here," Beatrice announced, "but we can still be friends, right?" She pulled George's hair affectionately.
"Be careful," George said in a tired, humble voice. "I did not sleep in our small, slimy room. There is, I believe, a creature living in our walls. I hear it, scuttling. I have to admit, I may not have made the brightest decision in following Simon. It's possible that I'm not that bright. It's possible that looks are all I have.
Actually, even though I'm not willing to follow you into boring classes and the endless disrespect of my classmates, I think it was a very cool thing you did, Simon," said Beatrice. She smiled, teeth flashing white against her brown skin, and her smile was warm and admiring, about the nicest thing Simon had seen all day.
"You're right. Our morals are sound even though our walls are infested. And we still have some interesting classes, Si," George said. "Plus, don't worry. We still get sent on missions to fight demons and rogue downworlders."
Simon choked on his soup. "I was not worrying about that. Are any of our teachers at all worried that sending our people out with no superpowers to fight demons might prove just a teeny bit, not to put too fine a point on it, fatal?" "They have to face trials of courage before they must face ascension," said Beatrice. "Better for them to drop out because they are scared or even because a demon ate their leg than to have them try to ascend without being suitable and die in the attempt."
"Well, that's a cool, cheerful, and normal thing to say," Simon said. "Shadowhunters are great at saying normal things."
"Well, I'm looking forward to the missions," said George. "And tomorrow a shadowhunter is coming in to give a guest lecture about the lesser utilized weapons. I hope there'll be a practical demonstration."
"Not in a classroom," said Beatrice. "Think of what one heavy-duty crossbow could do to the walls." That was all the warning Simon got before he clattered happily into class the next day, George on his heels, and found Dean Penhallow already there, talking with nervous good cheer. The classroom was very full. Both the regular stream and the mundane stream were in attendance.
"Despite her tender years, a shadow hunter of some renown and noted expertise with less used weapons such as the whip, may I welcome to Shadow Hunter Academy our first guest lecturer, Isabel Lightwood."
Isabel turned, sleek black hair flaring around her shoulders, black skirt flaring around her pale legs. She was wearing glittery plum lipstick, so dark it looked almost black. Her eyes did look black, but another small knife of memory pierced Simon, of course at the worst time possible. He remembered the colors of her eyes from close up, very dark brown, like brown velvet, so close to black as to make no difference, but with paler rings of color. He stumbled over to his desk and folded into his chair with a thump. When the dean left, Isabel turned and regarded her class with absolute contempt. "I'm not actually here to instruct any of you idiots," she told them, walking up and down the rows of desks. "If you want to use a whip, train with one, and if you lose an ear, don't be a big whiny baby." Several of the boys nodded, as if hypnotized. Almost all the boys were watching Isabel as if they were a nest of snakes intent on being charmed. Some of the girls were watching her that way, too.
"I am here," Isabel announced, finishing her prowl of the perimeter and turning to face them all again with snapping eyes, "to determine my relationship."
Simon goggled. She couldn't be talking about him, could she?
Do you see that man? Isabel asked, pointing at Simon. Apparently she was talking about him. That's Simon Lewis, and he is my boyfriend. So, if any of you think about trying to hurt him because he's a Mundy, or, may the angel have mercy on your soul, pursuing him romantically, I will come after you. I will hunt you down, and I will crush you to powder.
We're just bros, said George hastily.
Beatrice edged her desk away from Simon's.
Isabel lowered her hand. The flush of excitement was receding from her face as well, as though she had come to say what she had said, and now that she was out of adrenaline, she was actually processing what had come out of her mouth.
I'm going to go now, Isabel announced. Thank you for your attention. Class dismissed. She turned and walked out of the room.
I have to... Simon began, rising from his desk on legs that felt a little unsteady.
I have to go.
Yeah, you do, George said.
Simon went out the door and ran down the stone corridors of the academy. He knew Isabel was fast, so he ran, faster than he'd ever run on the training grounds, and he caught up to her in the hall. She stopped in the dim light of the stained glass window as he called her name.
Isabel!
She stood waiting for him. Her lips parted and gleamed, like plums under a winter frost, ready to be tasted. Simon could see himself running up to her, catching her in his arms, and kissing her mouth, knowing what it had taken for her to do that. His brave, brilliant Isabel. And carried away in a whirl of love and joy. But he saw it as if through a pane of glass, as if looking into another dimension. One he could see, but not quite touch. Simon felt a hot pang of grief through his whole body. Not just through his chest, as if he had been struck by lightning, but he had to say it.
I'm not your boyfriend, Isabel, he called out.
She went white. Simon was horrified by how badly his words had come out.
I mean, I can't be your boyfriend, Isabel, he said. I'm not him. That guy who was your boyfriend, that guy you want.
He almost said, I wish I could be. He had wished he could be. That was why he came to the academy. To learn to be that guy they all wanted back. He'd wanted to be that way, be an awesome hero like in a game or a movie. He'd been so sure at first that was what he wanted.
Except wishing he could be that guy was like wishing to obliterate the guy he was now, the normal, happy guy in a band, who could still love his mother, who did not wake up in the coldest, darkest hour of the night weeping for dead friends.
And he did not know if he could be that guy she wanted. Whether he wished it or not.
You remember everything, and I don't remember enough, Simon went on.
I hurt you when I don't mean to, and I thought I could come to the academy and come back better, but it's not looking good. The whole game has changed. My skill level has decreased, and the whole difficulty level has been jacked up to impossible.
Simon, Isabel interrupted, you're talking like a nerd. She said it almost fondly, but it freaked Simon out more. And I don't know how to be smooth, sexy vampire Simon for you either.
Isabel's perfect mouth curved, like a dark half moon in her pale face.
You were never that smooth, Simon.
Oh, said Simon.
Oh, thank God. I know you've had a lot of boyfriends. I remember there was a fairy and...
Another flash of memory, this time most unwelcome.
Lord Montgomery? You dated a member of the nobility? How am I ever supposed to compete with that?
Isabel still looked fond, but it was diluted with a good deal of impatience.
You're Lord Montgomery, Simon.
I don't understand, said Simon.
When you're made a vampire, you're also given a title?
Maybe that made sense. Vampires were aristocratic.
Isabel put her fingers up to touch her brow. It was a gesture that seemed like disdainful weariness, like Isabel was tired of all this.
But Simon saw the way her eyes closed, as if she could not look at him when she spoke.
It's just a joke between you and me, Simon.
Simon was tired of all this, of knowing pieces of her so well and others not at all, of knowing he was not what she wanted.
No, he said. It was a joke between you and him.
You are him, Simon!
I'm not, Simon told her. I don't know how to be. That's what I've been realizing all this time. I thought I could learn to be him, but since I got to the academy, I learned that I can't. I can't experience everything we did over again. I'm never going to be that guy who did all that. I'm going to do different things. I'm going to be a different guy. Once you ascend, you'll get all your memories back, Isabel shouted at him.
If I ascend, it'll be 2 years. I'm not going to be the same guy in 2 years, even if I do get all the memories back, because there will be so many other memories.
You're not going to be the same girl. I know you believed in me, Isabel. I know you believed because you cared about him.
That means more than I can tell you, but Isabel, it isn't fair of me to take advantage of your belief. It isn't fair to keep you waiting for him, when he isn't ever coming back.
Isabel had her arms crossed, fingers curled into the dark plum velvet of her own jacket as if she was offering herself comfort.
None of this is fair.
It isn't fair that part of your life was ripped from you, and it isn't fair that you were ripped away from me.
I'm so angry, Simon.
Simon took a step toward her and took one of her hands, uncurling her fingers from her jacket. He did not take her in his arms, but he stood a little distance away from her, their hands linked across the distance. Her trembling mouth sparkled, and so did her eyelashes. He did not know if this was indomitable Isabel crying, or whether it was sparkly mascara. All he knew was that she shone, like the constellation in the shape of a girl.
Isabel, he said.
Isabel. She was so much herself, and he had scarcely any idea who he was.
Do you know why you're here? She demanded.
He just looked at her. There were so many things that question could mean, and so many ways to answer.
I mean at the academy, she said. Do you know why you want to be a shadow hunter?
He hesitated.
I wanted to be that guy again, he said. That hero you all remember? And this seems like a training school for heroes.
It's not, Isabel said flatly. It's a training school for shadow hunters. And yeah, I think that's a pretty cool thing. And yeah, I think protecting the world is pretty heroic. But there are cowardly shadow hunters and evil shadow hunters and hopeless shadow hunters. If you're going to get through the academy, you have to figure out why you want to be a shadow hunter and what that means to you, Simon. Not just why you want to be special.
He winced, but it was true. You're right. I don't know. I know that I want to be here. I know I need to be here. Believe me, if you'd seen the bathrooms, you'd know I didn't make this decision lightly.
She gave him a withering look.
But, he said, I don't know why. I don't know myself well enough yet. I know what I said to you. At first, I know what you hoped, that I could turn back into who I was before. I was really wrong. And I'm really sorry.
Sorry? Isabel demanded. Do you know what a big deal it was for me to come here? To make a fool of myself in front of all these people? Do you know?
Of course you don't.
You don't want me to believe in you? You don't want me to choose you?
Isabel pulled her hands away from him, turned her face away as she had in the garden of the Institute that was her home. This time Simon knew it was absolutely his fault. She was already leaving as she said,
Have it your way, Simon Lewis.
I won't.
Simon was so depressed after Isabel had gone, after he had driven her away, that he didn't think he'd ever move off his cot bed again. He lay there, listening to George chatter and scrub the walls. He'd removed an impressive amount of the slime. Simon retreated to where he believed nobody would ever find him. He went and sat in the bathroom. The stone flags were cracked in the bathrooms. There was something dark in one of the toilets. Simon hoped it was just a result of people throwing away the soup. He had half an hour of peace in the bathroom, alone with the horrible toilets, until George poked his head around the door.
Hey, buddy, said George. Do not use these bathrooms. I cannot stress that enough.
I'm not going to use the bathroom, Simon said drearily. I'm a mess, but I'm not an idiot. I just want to be alone and think depressing thoughts.
You want to know a secret?
George was silent for a moment.
If you want to tell me, you don't have to. We all have secrets.
I chased away the most amazing girl I ever met because I'm too much of a loser to manage being myself. That's my secret. I want to be a hero, but I'm not one. Everybody thinks I'm some amazing warrior who summoned angels and rescued shadow hunters and saved the world, but it's a joke. I can't even remember what I did. I can't imagine how I did it. I'm no one special, and no one's going to be fooled for long, and I don't even know what I'm doing here.
So, you have a secret that can beat that?
There was a low gurgle from one of the toilets. Simon did not even look toward it. He was not interested in investigating that sound.
I'm not a shadow hunter at all, George said in a rush.
Sitting on a bathroom floor was not an ideal way to receive monumental revelations. Simon frowned.
You're not a Lovelace?
No, I'm a Lovelace.
George's normally light-hearted voice was stern.
But I'm not a shadow hunter. I'm adopted. The shadow hunters who came to recruit me didn't even think of that. Of people with shadow hunter blood wanting mundane children? Giving them shadow hunter names and thinking of them as their own? I was always planning to tell the truth. But I figured it would be easier when I got here. Less trouble to decide to let me stay than to work out whether they wanted to bring me. Then I met the others. And I started the course. And I figured I could keep up with them pretty easily. I saw what they thought of mundanes. I figured it wouldn't do any harm to keep the secret and stay in the elite class and be like the rest of the guys just for a while.
George shoved his hands in his pockets and stared at the floor.
But I met you, too. And you didn't have any special powers. You'd already done more than all the rest of them put together. You do things now, like transfer to the mundane class when you didn't have to. That made me man up and tell the dean I was mundane and get transferred, too. You did that, the way you are now, okay? So stop talking about what a loser you are, because I wouldn't follow a loser into a slime-covered bedroom or a slime-covered bathroom. And I've followed you into both.
George paused and said aggressively,
And I'd really like to change the phrasing of that last sentence, because it sounded so bad, but I'm not sure how.
I'll take it in the spirit it was meant, said Simon. And I'm really glad you told me. I was hoping for a cool Monday roommate from the start.
You want to know another secret?
George asked. Simon was slightly terrified of another revelation and worried George was a secret agent, but he nodded anyway.
Everybody in this academy, shadowhunters and mundanes, people with the sight and without it. Every one of them is looking to be a hero. We are all hoping for it, and trying for it, and soon we'll be bleeding for it. And you're just like the rest of us, Sai. Except, there's one thing about you that's different. We all want to be heroes. But you know you can be one. You know, in another life, in an alternate universe, however you want to think of it, you were a hero. You can be one again. Maybe not the same hero, but you have it in you to make the right choices, to make the big sacrifices. That's a lot of pressure, but it's a lot more hope than any of the rest of us have. Think about it that way, Simon Lewis, and I think you're pretty lucky.
Simon had not thought about it that way. He just kept thinking that a switch was going to be flipped and he was going to be special again. But Isabel was right. This could not just be about being special. He remembered seeing the academy for the first time, how glamorous and impressive it had looked from a distance, how different it had looked close up. He was starting to think of the process of becoming a shadow hunter was the same way. He was starting to believe it would all be cutting himself with a sword and having his horse run away with him, eating terrible soup and scraping slime off the walls, and figuring out slowly and awkwardly who he really wanted to be this time around. George leaned against the bathroom wall, which was an obviously rash and dangerous move, and grinned at him. Seeing that grin, seeing George refuse to be serious for more than a second, reminded Simon of something else about his first day at the academy. It reminded him of hope.
Speaking of luck, Isabel Lightwood is a total babe. Actually, she's better than a babe. She's a hero. She came all the way here to tell the world you are hers. You're telling me she doesn't know another hero when she sees one. You're gonna figure out what you're doing here. Isabel Lightwood believes in you. For what it's worth. I do too.
Simon stared up at George. It's worth a lot, he said finally. Thanks for saying all that.
You're welcome. Now please get up off the floor, George implored. It is so nasty.
Simon did get up off the floor. He left the bathroom, George ahead of him, and both of them almost plowed into Katerina Loss, who was dragging a huge covered tureen over the flagstones with a scraping sound.
Miss Loss, said Simon, can I ask you what you're doing?
Dean Penhello has decided that she's not going to order fresh food supplies until all this delicious, nutritious soup has been consumed. So, I am going to bury the soup in the woods, announced Katerina Loss. Grab the other handle.
Huh, okay, good plan,
said Simon, grabbing the other handle of the tureen and falling in with Katerina.
George followed them as they went, unsteadily balancing the soup tureen between them. As they walked through the drafty, echoing corridors of the academy, Simon added, "I just have one question about the woods. And bears."
The Lost Herondale. Read by Jack Fallahy.
There was a time, not long ago, when Simon Lewis had been convinced that all gym teachers were actually demons escaped from some hell dimension, nourishing themselves on the agonies of uncoordinated youth. Little did he know he'd been almost right. Not that Shadowhunter Academy had gym class, not exactly. And his physical trainer, Delaney Scarsbury, wasn't so much a demon as a Shadowhunter who probably thought lopping the heads off a few multi-headed hellbeasts comprised an ideal Saturday night. But as far as Simon was concerned, these were technicalities.
"Lewis!"
Scarsbury shouted, looming over Simon, who lay flat on the ground, trying to will himself to do another push-up.
"What are you waiting for? An engraved invitation?"
Scarsbury's legs were as thick as tree trunks, and his biceps were no less depressingly huge. This, at least, was one difference between the Shadowhunter and Simon's mundane gym teachers, most of whom could barely have bench-pressed a bag of potato chips. Also, none of Simon's gym teachers had worn an eye patch or carried a sword carved with runes and blessed by angels. But in all the ways that counted, Scarsbury was exactly the same.
"Everyone, get a look at Lewis!"
he called to the rest of the class, as Simon levered himself into a shaky plank position, willing himself not to do a belly flop into the dirt again.
"Our hero here might just defeat his evil spaghetti arms after all."
Gratifyingly, only one person laughed. Simon recognized the distinctive snicker of John Cartwright, eldest son of a distinguished Shadowhunter family, as he'd be the first to tell you. John believed he was born for greatness and seemed especially irritated that Simon, a hapless mundane, had managed to get there first, even if he could no longer remember doing it. John, of course, was the one who'd started calling Simon our hero, and like all evil gym teachers before him, Scarsbury had been only too happy to follow the popular kid's lead. Shadowhunter Academy had two tracks, one for the Shadowhunter kids who'd grown up in this world and whose blood destined them for demon fighting, and one for the mundanes, clueless, lacking in genetic destiny, and scrambling to catch up. They spent most of the day in separate classes, the mundanes studying rudimentary martial arts and memorizing the finer points of the Nephilim Covenant, the Shadowhunters focusing on more advanced skills, juggling throwing stars and studying Thonian, and marking themselves up with runes of obnoxious superiority and who knew what else. Simon was still hoping that somewhere in the Shadowhunter manual was the secret of the Vulcan death grip. After all, as his instructors kept reminding them, all the stories are true. But the two tracks began every day together. Every student, no matter how inexperienced or advanced, was expected to report to the training field at sunrise for a grueling hour of calisthenics. "Divided we stand," Simon thought, his stubborn biceps refusing to bulge. "United we do push-ups." When he'd told his mother he wanted to go to military school so he could toughen up, she'd given him a strange look. Not as strange as if he'd said he'd wanted to go to demon fighting school so he could drink from the mortal cup, ascend to the ranks of Shadowhunter, and just maybe get back the memories that had been stolen from him in a nearby hell dimension. But close. The look said, "My son, Simon Lewis, wants to sign up for a life where you have to do 100 push-ups before breakfast?" He knew this because he could read her pretty well, but also because once she'd regained the ability to speak, she'd said, "My son, Simon Lewis, wants to sign up for a life where you have to do 100 push-ups before breakfast?" Then she'd asked him teasingly if he was possessed by some evil creature, and he'd pretended to laugh, trying for once to ignore the tendrils of memory from that other life, his real life. The one where he'd been turned into a vampire and his mother had called him a monster and barricaded him from the house. Sometimes, Simon thought he would do anything to get back the memories that had been taken from him, but there were moments when he wondered whether some things were better left forgotten. Scarsbury, more demanding than any drill sergeant, made his young charges do 200 push-ups every morning. But he did, at least, let them eat breakfast first. After the push-ups came the laps. After the laps came the lunges. And after the lunges... "After you, hero," John sneered, offering Simon first shot at the climbing wall. "Maybe if we give you a head start, we won't have to wait around so long for you to catch up." Simon was too exhausted for a snarky comeback, and definitely too exhausted to claw his way up the climbing wall, one impossibly distant handhold at a time. He made it up a few feet, at least, then paused to give his shrieking muscles a rest. One by one, the other students scrambled up past him, none of them seeming even slightly out of breath. "Be a hero, Simon," Simon muttered bitterly, remembering the life Magnus Bane had dangled before him in their first meeting, or at least, the first one Simon could remember. "Have an adventure, Simon. How about turn your life into one long agonizing gym class, Simon?" "Dude, you're talking to yourself again." George Lovelace, Simon's roommate and only real friend at the academy, hoisted himself up beside Simon. "You losing your grip?" "I'm talking to myself, not little green men," Simon clarified. "Still sane, last I checked." "No, I mean..." George nodded towards Simon's sweaty fingers, which had gone pale with the effort of holding his weight. "Your grip?" "Oh, yeah, I'm peachy," Simon said. "Just giving you guys a head start. I figure in battle conditions, it's always the red shirts who go in first, you know?" George's brow furrowed. "Red shirts, but our gear is black?" "No, red shirts. Cannon fodder? Star Trek? Any of this ringing a..." Simon sighed at the blank look on George's face. George had grown up in an isolated rural pocket of Scotland, but it wasn't like he'd lived without internet and cable TV. The problem, as far as Simon could tell, was that the Lovelaces watched nothing but soccer and used their Wi-Fi almost exclusively to monitor Dundee United stats and occasionally to buy sheep feed in bulk.
"Forget it. I'm fine. See you at the top."
George shrugged and returned to his climb. Simon watched his roommate, a tan, muscled Abercrombie model type, swing himself up the plastic rock handholds as effortlessly as Spider-Man. It was ridiculous. George wasn't even a shadow hunter, not by blood. He'd been adopted by a shadow-hunting family, which made him just as much a mundane as Simon. Except that, like most of the other mundanes, and very unlike Simon, he was a near-perfect specimen of humanity. Repulsively athletic, coordinated, strong and swift, and as close to a shadow hunter as you could get without the blood of the angels running through your veins. In other words, a jock. Life at Shadow Hunter Academy was lacking in a lot of things Simon had once believed he couldn't survive without. Computers, music, comic books, indoor plumbing. Over the past couple of months, he'd gotten mostly used to doing without, but there was one glaring absence he still couldn't wrap his head around. Shadow Hunter Academy had no nerds. Simon's mother had once told him that the thing she loved most about being Jewish was that you could step into a synagogue anywhere on Earth and feel like you'd come home. India, Brazil, New Zealand, even Mars, if you could rely on Shalom Spacemen, the homemade comic book that had been the highlight of Simon's third-grade Hebrew school experience. Jews everywhere prayed with the same language, the same melodies, the same words. Simon's mother, who it should be noted, had never left the tri-state area, much less the country, had told her son that as long as he could always find people who spoke the language of his soul, he would never be alone. And she turned out to be right. As long as Simon could find people who spoke his language, the language of Dungeons and Dragons and World of Warcraft, the language of Star Trek and manga and indie rockers with songs like Han Shot First and What the Frack, he felt like he was among friends. The shadow hunters in training, on the other hand, most of them probably thought manga was some kind of demonic athlete's foot. Simon was doing his best to educate them to the finer things in life. But guys like George Lovelace had about as much aptitude for 12-sided dice as Simon did for, well, anything more physically complex than walking and chewing gum at the same time. As John had predicted, Simon was the last one left on the climbing wall. By the time the others had ascended, rung the tiny bell at the top, and rappelled to the ground again, he'd made it only 10 meters off the ground. The last time that had happened, Scarsbury, who had an impressive flair for sadism, had made the entire class sit and watch as Simon painstakingly made his way to the top. This time, their trainer cut the torture session mercifully short.
"Enough!"
Scarsbury shouted, clapping his hands together. Simon wondered whether there was such a thing as a ruined whistle. Maybe he could get Scarsbury one for Christmas.
"Lewis, put us all out of our misery and get down from there. Rest of you, hit the weapons room, pick yourself out a sword, then pair up for scrimmage."
His iron grip closed over Simon's shoulder.
"Not so fast, hero. You stay behind."
Simon wondered whether this was it. The moment that his heroic past was finally overpowered by his hapless present, and he was about to be kicked out of school. But then Scarsbury called out several other names, among them Lovelace, Cartwright, Beauvale, Mendoza, most of them shadow hunters, all of them the best students in the class. And Simon let himself relax, just a little. Whatever it was Scarsbury had to say, it couldn't be that bad. Not if he was also saying it to John Cartwright, gold medalist and sucking up.
"Sit,"
Scarsbury boomed. They sat.
"You're here because you're the 20 most promising students in the class," Scarsbury said, pausing to let the compliment settle over them.
Most of the students beamed. Simon willed himself to disappear. More like the 19 most promising students and the one still coasting on the achievements of his past self. He felt like he was 8 years old again, overhearing his mother bully the Little League coach into letting him take a turn at bat.
"We've got a downworlder that broke the law and needs taken care of," Scarsbury continued. "And the powers that be have decided it's the perfect opportunity for you boys to become men."
Marisol Rojas Garza, a scrawny 13-year-old mundane with a permanent "I will kick your ass" expression, cleared her throat loudly.
Men and women,"
Scarsbury clarified, looking none too happy about it. Murmurs rippled across the students, excitement mixed with alarm. None of them had expected a real training mission this soon. Behind Simon, John faked a yawn.
"Boring. I could kill a rogue downworlder in my sleep."
Simon, who actually did kill rogue downworlders in his sleep, along with the terrifying tentacled demons and in darkened shadow hunters and other bloodthirsty monsters that crawled through his nightmares, didn't feel much like yawning. He felt more like throwing up. George raised his hand.
Sir, some of us here are still..."
He swallowed, and not for the first time, Simon wondered whether he regretted admitting the truth about himself. The academy was a much easier place to be when you were on the elite shadow hunter track. And not just because the elites didn't have to sleep in the dungeon.
"Mundanes." "I noticed that myself, Lovelace," Scarsbury said dryly. "Imagine my surprise when I discovered some of you dregs are worth something after all."
"No, I mean..."
George hesitated, substantially more easily intimidated than any 6'5" Scottish sex god, Beatriz Velez Mendoza's description, according to her big-mouthed best friend, had a right to be. Finally, he squared his shoulders and plowed forward.
"I mean, we're mundanes. We can't be marked. We can't use setup blades or witchlight or anything. We don't have, like, super speed or angelic reflexes. Going after a downworlder when we've only had a couple of months of training. Isn't that dangerous?"
A vein in Scarsbury's neck began to throb alarmingly, and his good eye bulged so far out of his head Simon feared it might pop. Which, he thought, could finally explain the mysterious eye patch.
"Dangerous? Dangerous?" he boomed. "Anyone else here afraid of a little danger?"
If they were, they were even more afraid of Scarsbury, and so kept their mouths shut. He let the silence hang, thick and angry, for an agonizing minute. Then he scowled at George.
"If you're afraid of dangerous situations, boy, you're in the wrong place. And as for the rest of you dregs, best you find out now whether you've got what it takes. If you don't,
then drinking from the mortal cup will kill you. And trust me, Mundies, getting bled dry by a bloodsucker would be a much kinder way to go. He'd fixed his gaze on Simon, maybe because Simon had once been a bloodsucker, or maybe because he now seemed the most likely to get drained by one. It occurred to Simon that Scarsbury could be hoping for that outcome, that he'd selected Simon for this mission in hopes of getting rid of his biggest problem student. Though surely no shadow hunter, even a shadow hunting gym teacher, would stoop so low. Something in Simon, some ghost of a memory, warned him not to be so sure.
"Is that understood?" Scarsbury said. "Is there anyone here who wants to go running to Mommy and Daddy crying, 'Please save me from the big bad vampire?'"
Dead silence.
"Excellent," Scarsbury said. "You have 2 days to train. Then just keep reminding yourself how impressed all your little friends will be when you come back," he chuckled. "If you come back."
The student lounge was dark and musty, lit by flickering candlelight and watched over by the glowering visages of Shadowhunters past, Herondale's and Lightwood's, and even the occasional Morgenstern peering down from heavy gilt frames, their bloody triumphs preserved in fading oil paint. But it had several obvious advantages over Simon's bedroom. It wasn't in the dungeon, it wasn't splattered with black slime, it didn't carry the faint whiff of what might have been moldy socks but might have been the bodies of former students decaying under the floorboards, it didn't have what sounded like a large and boisterous family of rats scrabbling behind the walls. But the one notable advantage of his room, Simon was reminded that night, while camped out in a corner playing cards with George, was the guarantee that John Cartwright and his Shadowhunter track groupies would never, ever deign to cross the threshold.
"No sevens," George said, as John, Beatrice, and Julie swept into the lounge. "Go fish."
As John and the two girls approached, Simon suddenly got very interested in the card game. Or, at least, he did his best. At a normal boarding school, there'd be a TV in the lounge instead of a gigantic portrait of Jonathan Shadowhunter, his eyes blazing as bright as his sword. There'd be music leaking out of the dorm rooms and mingling in the corridor. Some of it good, some of it fish. There'd be email and texting and internet porn. At the academy, after-hours options were more limited. There was studying the codex, and there was sleep. Playing cards were about as close as he could get to gaming. And when he went too long without gaming, Simon got a little itchy. It turned out that when you spent all day training to defeat actual real-world monsters, Dungeons & Dragons questing lost a bit of its luster. Or at least, so claimed George and every other student Simon had tried to recruit for a campaign, which left him with old, half-forgotten summer camp standards. Hearts, Egyptian rat screw, and of course, go fish. Simon stifled a yawn. John, Beatrice, and Julie stood beside them, waiting to be acknowledged. Simon hoped if he waited long enough, they'd just go away. Beatrice wasn't so bad, at least not on her own. But Julie could have been carved out of ice. She had suspiciously few physical flaws. The silky blonde hair of a Barbie doll, the porcelain skin of a cosmetics model, better curves than any of the Bikini Girl posters papering Eric's garage, and wore the hawkish expression of someone on a search-and-destroy mission for any weakness whatsoever. All that, and she carried a sword. John, of course, was John. Shadowhunters didn't practice magic. That was a fundamental tenet of their beliefs. So it was unlikely that the Academy would teach Simon a way to make John Cartwright vanish into another dimension. But a guy could dream. They didn't go away. Finally, George, congenitally incapable of being rude, set down his cards.
"Can we help you?"
George asked, a sliver of ice cooling his Scottish brogue. John's and Julie's friendliness had melted away once they learned the truth about George's mundane blood, and though George never said anything about it, he clearly had never forgiven nor forgotten.
"Actually, yes," Julie said.
She nodded at Simon. "Well, you can." Finding out about the imminent vampire-killing mission hadn't exactly tied a bright yellow ribbon around Simon's day. He wasn't in the mood,
What do you want?
Julie looked awkwardly at Beatrice, who stared down at her feet.
You ask, Beatrice murmured. Better if you do, Julie shot back,